Welcome to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, one of the fastest growing movie podcasts in the world,
where we discuss all things film.
On this bonus episode, we discuss Black Widow.
Released in 2021, directed by Kate Shortland, written by Eric Pearson, based on stories by Jack Schaefer and Ned Benson.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. This is Anthony.
And this is James, and we're going to do Black Widow. This just got released on Disney Plus. We rented it for $30. You can also see it in theaters.
And it's actually cheaper than the movie theater.
Well, it depends on what theater you go to.
Yeah, that's true.
We had a good time watching this because, you know, we've been waiting for a Black Widow movie for so long. I mean, she deserved a movie years ago.
And she's one of my favorite Avengers.
Yeah, she's a really cool Avenger. And the thing about this movie, it feels kind of weird because this character's dead in the MCU. And then they finally give her solo movie after she's dead, but it's also like an origin story. So when I was watching it, it felt a little weird watching it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the film. It would have worked better for sure if it was released after Civil War, because how the film begins and ends, it's a book note and it leaves off from Civil War and leads into Infinity War.
Yeah.
And it just kind of felt like it took me out of it in a way. You know what I mean?
It's just a damn shame they never gave her a movie. She should have had a movie 10 years ago.
She should have had her own franchise.
Everyone else
now
had three movies, and she finally gets her movie after her character's dead. And it's an origin story of a character who doesn't get another sequel, right?
I'm not really sure because fans were always asking and addressing it, asking Marvel execs and Feige, like, why hasn't she gotten a movie yet? And I can't remember what they ever said about it, but it just didn't make sense that she wasn't also getting her own solo movies. Her movies, they didn't need to be $150 million budget box office juggernauts. Like, you could have made a Black Widow movie for $50 million, no problem, because you don't need otherworldly special effects and CGI and gigantic things happening, although they did that in this film. It could have always been a grounded, smaller story, so I don't really know why they were able to fit it in.
You know, I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, I mean, Black Panther should have got his movie a decade earlier, too. So, I mean, I don't know what they're going on, but, you know, it's Disney, it's Marvel.
Yeah.
But thank God it came out finally, eventually.
And, yeah, Marvel's back.
Yeah, but another thing about the movie, I liked it overall. I thought it was a cool movie. We had a lot of fun watching it. It might have ran a little too long for me, but aside from that, the action was bombastic. And Black Widow was fantastic. And I just want to give a shout-out to Heidi Moneymaker. She's ScarJo's stuntwoman. Since Iron Man 2, since Black Widow was introduced.
Oh, wow.
So she showcased a ton of stunt work in this film because the thing with Black Widow is she's one of my favorite fighters of all the Avengers because of her style. It's very fluid and like choreographed and like it's unique compared to everyone else. It's not power. She's not smashing things like Hulk or bringing down lightning, but it's very intricate, complex fighting.
And also, you can look at Black Widow and Hawkeye as like the Batman-esque characters in the Avengers because they don't have superpowers and they have to rely on their skill set and the gadgets that they have. And the fights were fantastic. Florence Pugh did a really great job stepping into the action as well. She's never done anything even close to action before, so she really held her own, it looked like, in their scenes. Like the scene when ScarJo and Florence Pugh fight each other, it looked like they did a ton of that except for a few
some CGI shots of like her smashing into the walls and stuff.
Yeah, there are definitely a few stunt women involved, but otherwise it looked like they got most of it in themselves.
Yeah, it was excellent choreographing. And the cool thing about this movie is it feels like three different styles all mashed up into one movie. So like we have the long opening first act of like her origin with her fake family, and it's very reminiscent of that show The Americans.
Yeah, it's The Americans. Sorry. Yeah, The Americans is one of the best shows ever. It's very underrated. It was on FX and it's about a family, two Russian spies who were planted in America to pass themselves off as Americans, and they lived there for like 10 years, and they even had kids there, and they lived this secret life while they carry out missions in America. And so when I watched this opening, I think the opening is one of the best parts of the film. It probably is the best part. And I was like, oh, this is just like The Americans. Like they use all these characters and put them in America as infiltrating the espionage-esque quality in the story.
Yeah, and what I love about it is they hid David Harbour's character, the Red Guardian, Alexei, his superpowers. And what's cool about the Red Guardian is I didn't really know much about him, but I guess he was created as like a counter to Captain America, given the same soldier serum for super strength. And so he's hiding it until they're escaping on the plane. And then he tossed that like giant truck away. I'm like, holy crap, did you see that?
Yeah. That opening, it works well because there was a slow build.
Yeah.
And they slowly revealed everything. And It starts out like it's like a nice family situation, and then they have to leave for some reason, and you're like, oh, why are they leaving? What's going on? And then it's like, so something's up with the parents. They seem to be in trouble or something. And then you see the SHIELD forces are like chasing them. You're like, holy shit, what are they doing? Who are these people? It's a really great, intriguing opening for the family to set up what will eventually become them reuniting by the second half of the film.
Yes, like the first act is very Americans-esque. And then I would say the second act is very Bourne-esque, like Bourne Supremacy.
What she called the superior, William Hurt, what she called him, like warning him not to attack her, I was like, oh, it's Bourne.
But in general, like, because there's a lot of hand-to-hand combat fight scenes, especially the one with Yelena, and then like they're in the middle in different apartments, like these big high ceiling apartments in Europe. I was like, this looks so much like Bourne Supremacy. It's pretty cool. And I think that's what they were going for, especially with the hand-to-hand combat fight between the two sisters.
Yeah, they definitely wanted it to be gritty. And you haven't, like, I think the last female-led action film that was like that was Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron, which has some of the best fighting just in general in recent memory. And so I think they were definitely going for that tone in terms of the action, making it gritty. I thought they were going to stick with that as well, but ultimately I was a little underwhelmed that the finale was a gigantic CGI bomb, like you said, bombastic, huge, gigantic action sequence. And so how small it started, the first half, how small it was, I liked that. And then when it got really big, I felt like it was a little out of place for what the story had started out as.
Yeah, the third act, it looks like Avengers, the first Avengers movie. You know, we have this third act taking place on these like flying hovercrafts and a villain that I think if there's weakness to the movie, I think it's the villains. So I think what's his name?
Dracov.
Yeah. The guy who created the Red Room. He's hardly really in the movie, so you don't really feel
about Sam Winston.
Yeah. You don't really feel his threat very often. And also,
you're right. He's in the beginning and then just the
he's
end.
Just like brief glimpses here and there. So I wish there was less mystery surrounding him, as well as Taskmaster. The concept of the villain Taskmaster is fascinating. You know, this advanced martial artist who mimics the fighting of whoever they're in combat with, which is super interesting. And I think they only really did that for the scene where the Taskmaster fights Natasha on that bridge. But the thing with that is we eventually get the payoff. Spoilers are coming, obviously. So we get the twist ending, kind of, where we find out that it's actually his daughter that Natasha thought she blew up back in Budapest. And so the twist, I think saw coming because they were building up to it for so long. But then I wish what they would have done was not keep the audience in the dark so much about the Taskmaster and their true identity. Like, why not show like her and her father like interacting like on that ship, or like what he gives her the serum on a daily basis or something like that, and like maybe the brainwashing sequences with her.
Yeah, give her a story, make her more of a three-dimensional character. Because I think that's a good idea.
Because she just showed up randomly, and then she takes the helmet off. And we're like, oh, it's his daughter. But I wish the Taskmaster was more in the movie without her helmet on.
But no, I agree. I definitely think that they could have empathized the villains a little bit, not empathized, but shown us more of the characters. And there was a lot of secrecy involved in, especially with the twist. And also in terms of how their plan was carried out, you know, the plan with Melina and Alexei and the other two, and how they apparently Natasha and Melina came up with that plan while Alexei and Yelena were singing that song in the other room of the house. And I think that, I mean, if they could have told us the plan was going on, they didn't have to make it a twist for us.
Or keep going back.
You know what I mean? So I was a little taken out of it. And also I felt that coming up with that plan, it was literally like 30 seconds of screen time, but they managed to change outfits, come up with a plan, get wigs that looked identical to their own hairs, and then get the face coverings. Obviously takes a second, but I just was a little taken out of how fast things moved and how quickly things were made
compared to the slow first half of the film.
Yeah, because a good twist is great, especially when it seems plausible. It doesn't seem like an impossible thing that happened. Like sometimes Shyamalan twists are impossible to happen, like The Sixth Sense, but then also, you know, the village twist, that seems like it's a plausible thing the way he established the world, whereas this twist seemed like, it kind of seemed an impossibility that they did all this in a matter of 30 seconds, And then when you see that Natasha was actually Melina inside the when they were trapped in the in those rooms, you're like, oh, how did that happen? It seemed like it's a good twist because we never expected it because it seemed impossible to do.
I get that.
So
yeah.
I would just say there was a little too much secrecy involved with the film.
Speaking of Melina, Rachel Weisz is fantastic. She's such a talented actress, and she's so good in every. I think she steals the scenes when they're all four together. But aside from that, I think Florence Pugh kind of steals the movie and runs away with it as Yelena.
Well, also, yeah, Florence Pugh. She's been on our radar for a while, and I saw so she had this breakout film called Lady Macbeth.
Yeah,
I saw it like 5 years ago, and I saw this movie, and I was like, this girl is gonna be a superstar one day. She's so good in the film. Not many people saw it. It's a British film, and it's kind of a reimagining of Macbeth, but through a whole different story and everything. But a fantastic performance. It was her debut, and I was like, wow, this girl's crazy talented. And then she did Midsommar. And then a couple other films like
what
Little
was the
Women.
One she was in with Chris Pine the was that her
she was in Outlaw
King that is a really good movie and she's really good in that
but she has a very small role in that film.
But she's still I think she's great in every scene she's in.
She's great in it but then and I was always waiting for like when she's gonna break out because still I mean people love Midsommar but they still didn't know her by name but this was a big showcase for her on a mainstream scale.
And obviously, Little Women, she was very, that was a big
movie.
Yeah,
she got Oscar nominated for it.
But still, like, global, international audiences, not in everyone's living room.
Yeah, like, someone asked me, is she an A-lister or a B-lister? And I was like, well, she's still a B-lister because you have to be, to be an A-lister, you need to be a household name. Like, everyone, like, generally, everyone needs to know who you are. And still, I think a lot of, like, most people wouldn't know Florence Pugh by name. But fans of this
movie
are learning who she is, and I'm really happy for it because no one really knew who she was, and now she's going to have, like, the career trajectory for her is just going to be immense because she's so talented.
Well, it's clear that I think what Marvel did with this movie was actually very clever business-wise and for the future of the MCU in terms of looking ahead to, I guess you could say that, they're saying that Black Widow is the start of the next chapter in the MCU, not like the last Spider-Man movie that kind of capped it off, but this is like the start for what's to come. And I love ScarJo's Black Widow, but I think my main con with this movie is they kind of made her a side character in a lot of ways. She's like, she finally gets her own movie. We've been waiting like almost 20 years for this, like 15 years for her to get her own movie because Iron Man 2 is, all right, 11 years.
2012, yeah.
Oh, 2010 Iron Man 2, right?
Oh, yeah.
So 11 years we've been waiting for Natasha to finally get her own movie. And not that I don't love, like, the co-lead role with Florence Pugh and Yelena and, like, the buddy cop back and forth, which is super fun and it's very funny. Their dialogue is hysterical, especially if you have siblings and you get that same banter back and forth and you're just always frustrated with each other all the time. But they made Black Widow, like, a side character or a co-lead in her final film that she gets a solo movie. And then she doesn't get a sequel after this.
They made it a team up.
Yeah, and then but what I think they're doing and for their part on it being clever is they're setting up Yelena to be a major player in the future of the MCU. So like I feel like that's a smart business decision for MCU. But for Natasha's character, it's kind of disappointing because again she gets her movie. She finally gets her first solo movie 11 years later, 2 years after her character dies. And she's the co-lead in a way, you know? And she's not even really driving the plot. It's mostly Yelena.
Yeah. She's definitely driving the plot for sure.
It's both of them.
Yeah, both of them are because they both have the same goal. You know what I mean? But I definitely see what you're saying, whereas, like, when I heard they were doing a Black Widow movie, I had so many just, like, ideas like, oh, what could they do? It's so curious. And I think you're right. They ultimately ended up going with, like, the rudimentary team-up movie, like an Avengers-esque, but also Avengers-esque where you have these four main leads where I would have loved it if it was just Natasha on her own doing a mission that maybe wasn't even related to the overarching thing and storyline of
Well, this
Avengers.
Wasn't really a linked to the Avengers at all, really.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah. So it could have been this, but it may be a little bit smaller. And I think I would have loved to see a little bit more espionage. I think that's the thing that I was wanting to see was espionage, you know, being a spy, infiltrating other cultures, infiltrating industries, pretending she's like a master of impersonation. So I would have loved to see her, you know, blending into things and having like small missions within the overarching mission. And, you know, just using that skill set as a super assassin. She wasn't a super assassin in this movie. She was just like an action star, mm-hmm. which is fine. But I wanted to see like what's Natasha do when she's not with the Avengers? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's being a super spy.
Yeah.
So really? I was hoping for more espionage.
So maybe like set it before Civil War events where she's not on the run, not being chased by different organizations.
I say even set it before Avengers.
Yeah.
Before she ever comes into the MCU, mm-hmm. would have been fun too.
Yeah, I agree. That would have been cool. But overall, this movie it was a lot of fun and. The music is awesome by Lauren Balfe.
He's killing it, man.
He's been destroying. It. I mean, he was in Mission Impossible Fallout, and then what do you do? Tomorrow War was cool. So, but the interesting thing is they had Alexandre Desplat do this. He was attached originally to do the score, but then they cut him as the composer.
He did the score.
Yeah, and then they scratched it, which is really weird because, like, we were talking about this, and you said that it was a weird choice anyways to have Desplat do the score to this movie because he's arguably one of the best composers working today, mm-hmm. but his style doesn't really fit Marvel or action movies in general.
His style fits Wes Anderson perfectly.
Yeah.
and like, period pieces. The thing with Desplat is he is a genius, but when you said that he was originally, I looked into it when he was originally hired, and he wrote a whole score, and they basically rejected it and fired him. I can only imagine it wasn't what Marvel is used to, and also what an action blockbuster would have for a score. He has a very unique style, and he has his own voice as an artist. He's like so specific. Like you hear one of his scores, you know it's him. But he's not someone you would expect to make a big action score. So I thought it was an odd choice. So I would bet that the score was nothing what they had expected.
Yeah, I feel like whenever I listen to a movie that Desplat does or any of his soundtracks, his scores themselves feel like a story outside of the film that they're a part of.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something to do with that. And there's this great...
Well, if you think about who is he making scores for a lot lately, it's always Wes Anderson, and he's Guillermo del Toro's new composer too. And Greta Gerwig, so...
A lot of...
Yeah.
I mean, Imitation Game is fantastic too as well. But there's this great quote from Desplat where he's a composer. He said that he compared himself to a kite. If you hold the strings too much, I can't fly. So maybe because, you know, Marvel, they're kind of pumping movies out and TV shows like a machine. You know, it's like a factory sort of system. They have their steps that they want everyone on the production to hit. They have their quotas that they have to meet. And so I'm sure they have some reins on artistically of what people really want to do.
And it wasn't even until Iron Man 3 you would argue that you saw a Marvel movie with its own unique musical theme.
Well, Winter Soldier, I think, was the first
time. Winter Soldier.
Captain America Winter Soldier, which was Henry Jackman. That was the first
time. Did that come up before Iron Man 3?
I think so, yeah.
Or after?
Maybe.
I think after, because Iron Man 2 came up before Avengers.
Okay, and well,
Brian Tyler
around
did
the,
Iron
around
Man
the
3.
Same
yeah,
time.
I think then, yeah, those two movies were back to back.
But when I remember watching Captain America and Winter Soldier, I'm like, whoa, this does not sound like all the other Marvel movies because they all usually sound alike.
Yeah, because all the other ones, if you think of like Batman with Hans Zimmer, you know the theme. But when you think of the Captain America theme from the first one,
AC/DC.
Yeah, or the Iron Man one before that one, or Thor, it's like you can't really think of the theme.
Yeah.
And then now they have a great like the Marvel Avengers main theme on the title credits.
This is one of my favorite Marvel scores in general.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. And this movie's very funny. David Harbour is hilarious. We love him from Stranger Things, and he steals every scene he's in. He's hysterical as the Red Guardian. And then him and Florence Pugh 1-2 punch. Like comedy revelation, they're so great.
They were
together.
Cracking me up. There was like Florence Pugh, like in the helicopter, like was cracking me up so bad.
She
was talking about how all the Black Widows they're
sterilized.
They're basically sterilized. Yeah. And she's like using her hands.
Yeah, she's like, you just get right.
It's
up
a terrible.
In there.
It's a terrible thing, but she's like, yeah, you get your hands up right up there.
Jesus,
she was cracking me up.
My God, I will say though that Red Guardian seemed like a bit of an idiot some of the times, like a little too like Homer Simpson-esque. Like, come on, he can't be that dumb and that oblivious. But he's comic relief.
But I wish there was more of him, like, fighting hardcore-wise. Like, because, I mean, Captain America and him are supposed to... Obviously, he's washed up. He's old. You know, he didn't freeze in time like Captain America did, so he's not youthful anymore. Yeah. But still, he should have a ton of super strength and abilities, and he really just, like, kind of barely holds his own against the Taskmaster, mm-hmm. which I wish they could have shown him...
Because the Taskmaster didn't have superpowers, did she? I don't think so.
Well, I think... She's just highly trained, but also interfaces with a computer with a chip behind her head. So that's why I think she's interfaced with an AI system or something like that.
Yeah.
But still, I feel like he didn't even beat Taskmaster without help.
Oh, yeah. No way. He didn't. No.
I feel like if he's got the same powers as Captain America, he's going to be able to slam some heads. Let's go.
Yeah. But he's a complex character because he was built for something and he was never able to do it. And he has the opening scene where he says he's bragging about fighting Captain America, and then one of the prison guys is like, he was frozen in ice. So he's like always, he was never able to live his glory.
Yeah, you know, but I mean? Think the family part also is one of my favorite parts because it's such a complex family where they're not really, they're not blood related. They're like a forced family put into America at the time for spy reasons, and then they all go their separate ways, and then they find each other, and it's about them like rekindling what they had.
Yeah, that's the dinner scene is one of the best scenes because it's emotionally resonant, and we get so much empathy, and we understand the characters so much better. Great, you got four amazing actors, so it's a great scene. But I will just say, like I said earlier, the movies move so quickly, it moves so fast that I was kind of taken out of that scene because three of them had their outfits on, like Nat's in white. And Yelena's in her outfit, and then the Red Guardian's wearing his Red Guardian outfit, and it's a very emotional scene, and I was like, it would have felt better if they maybe changed in the helicopter on the way over, because it kind of took me out of it to see them wearing the superhero costumes at a nice little quaint dinner table talking about, like, their past. You know what I mean?
Hey, man, they're in a rush. They're trying to find the red room.
I'm just saying it went a little fast.
Trying to find that red room, man. They ain't got time to spare. They gotta go. They're on the move. They're action stars. Come on. If I was them, I'd wear that suit every day. They're sick costumes.
They look very comfortable.
Well, the Red Guardians don't look comfortable. It's so funny when he's trying to put on the pants and he's, you know, he's getting a little dad bod chubs and he's like, he's just groaning in the bathroom.
Still fits.
They all did great Russian accents too, by the way.
I believed all their accents.
Yeah, they're all really good.
Yeah, Florence. It's funny, not a Russian actor was Olga's Russian, I think she's Ukrainian. Yeah. So technically no Russians for this movie.
She only speaks at the end, really.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end she says that line, is he gone?
But in general, Natasha's storyline is really powerful because the whole film is really about her facing her past, besides trying to stop the Red Room and trying to save the Black Widows that are dispatched throughout the world that are being controlled by Dracov. She has to confront her past, specifically Budapest, where she committed a horrible act in terms of blowing up the apartment that Dracov was in, assuming he was there because his daughter was there. And so that's something that I'm sure that they always hint at it with Hawkeye and the Avengers films, like, oh, it's just like Budapest all over again in Budapest. So I think they were trying to figure out what that red ledger was going to be, and then they figured it out. And it's a dark past, which makes you question Natasha's motivations of her, you know, when she was a spy and, you know, she did unsavory things, obviously. And so it's about her confronting that and then coming to terms with it. And then it's great when, you know, she confronts the Taskmaster who's trying to kill her. Basically, she's programmed to kill Natasha, and she's sacrificing herself, or she's giving her life up basically to save the Taskmaster, to save her and try to revive her from, or bring her out of that trance.
Yeah, she's saving her own humanity because Natasha had such a dark past before she joined the Avengers. Like, she was literally like an assassin for hire, and she probably did, we don't know most of it, but she probably did a lot of horrible things while working as the assassin. So she did right her wrongs eventually, I think. I think she saved the universe, so that was pretty good.
Yeah, and I'm curious if, are they going to bring her back for another one? Are they going to do like a Black Widow 2 with ScarJo?
I mean, they could if they want.
They really could. I mean, technically they can do whatever they want. It just feels so weird because the character's dead.
Yeah.
It feels so weird.
Because you already said goodbye to her. Yeah. And it was a great death.
I think the way she went out was better. It was the best way to go out. You know, she sacrificed herself to save the world, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And now it looks like they're setting it up with that post-credit scene of sending Yelena after Clint for, we don't know why yet.
Well, we know why, because they both think that, or she's going to trick her into thinking that it was...
No, what I'm saying is, why are they sending her to get after Clint?
Gotcha.
Not her. Obviously, she thinks that...
Well, I think Marvel's like, you know, I think we should probably get Yelena into the Hawkeye TV show.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, is it going to be a TV show?
Yeah, Hawkeye is going to be a miniseries.
With Haley Steinfeld?
Steinfeld.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be like a 6-part miniseries.
I'm just curious, how are they going to say the reason is for hunting Clint?
I'm sure.
Why do they want him dead?
Well, if you think about it, at this point, Yelena's, besides Natasha, is probably a top assassin on the planet. So why not hire her? And if you want to take out Clint,
yeah. But why do they want to take out Clint? I'm curious.
So
I wonder
why.
They'll
figure something out. But
yeah,
if you're gonna take him out,
I'm just glad Renner's gonna be back.
A top assassin, do it.
Yeah,
it'll be cool. And then I'm just predicting. I think it's obvious that Yelena's gonna have a huge role in the future of the MCU. She'll probably be the Black Widow role.
Yeah. That'd be badass.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd love to see her in more movies.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, good for you, Florence Pugh. You are hilarious and talented as hell.
Make that money, girl. How much do you think ScarJo made on this movie? Probably.
Well, she was an executive producer on this.
Yeah, she made a ton of it.
She made a good amount. But the great thing about this movie, I know, you know, not everyone loves Marvel films, and some of them, sometimes they're questionable. And I think the great thing about the Black Widow film, though, is that it showed that people want to go back to the movie theaters. I mean, it made $60 million on Disney Plus, but it also made $80 million box office this weekend, which is fantastic news.
Disney's probably very happy right
Tremendous
now.
News. Yeah. And so, you know, ScarJo gets a cut of that because she's EP. So I'm sure she's getting back in, so we'll know how much she made post-box office, post-release.
She's probably going to pull in $40 million or something from this movie.
Good for her. Yeah. She deserves it.
Yeah.
And she's been a part of the team for that long. She's finally getting that big payday like Downey and Thor.
Yeah, I don't think she was ever getting paid as much as the guys.
I think she was getting a good amount, probably not even close to the back end that like Downey was getting.
And not even like the main three, like the guys that had their own movies.
So
like Cap, Thor, and Iron Man.
Yeah,
like
so those three are getting cheddar.
Because I know I Renner wasn't making that much either. And neither was Ruffalo.
And the cool thing about it is none of them were ever EPs or anything on the film. So I'm sure she's like, you know what? If we're this is going to be me. I'm helping produce this movie. I'm making this movie.
Yeah, good for her.
She probably bought part of the rights to it then.
And she's probably the best actor of all the Avengers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, even better than Downey.
Well, Downey, it's a tough choice.
ScarJo's a very talented actor.
I know she's very talented, but
actually you could have a conversation
Downey
about that.
Downey pre-Iron Man was, like, in the 90s, he was a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, but imagine the movies he would have made if he wasn't Iron Man.
Exactly.
So, yeah, if he was able to really flex his muscles, maybe he probably would have made some amazing movies.
I think Downey just likes to make money.
Yeah.
I mean, he takes good roles, obviously. I mean, yeah. He's great as Sherlock.
Yeah.
I love Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
But he likes to make money. For sure. He is Tony Stark.
Money's nice. Money buys things.
You want to do some trivia?
Yeah.
I got some stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see.
The first time that Florence Pugh met Scarlett Johansson was actually the day that they filmed their fight scene. They had never actually met in person before that. And so apparently Florence Pugh, like, they chatted for a bit and it was like, oh, it's nice to meet you. Now I'm going to beat you up. And then they started fighting.
All right, so this is the first movie of Phase 4 in the MCU, and this is the ninth time that Scarlett Johansson has played Natasha Romanoff, if you include Captain Marvel.
Mm, very cool.
So that's a lot of characters, a lot of recurring. Let's see. Emma Watson, Saoirse Ronan, Alice Englert. Dar Zuzovsky, and Florence Pugh were considered for the role of Yelena Belova. With Watson being the front runner, I don't think I could see Emma Watson really as this character. I'm not sure.
I don't know if I can see Emma being a badass.
Yeah.
No offense to her. She's
Belle.
Super talented.
She's Belle.
I mean, yeah, she's Hermione and Belle. And I don't think I'm not sure if I could believe her as being like an assassin spy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could. Whereas Florence Pugh, like, you believe it. Like, she's beating people up and she's talking like a badass. You're like, okay, I accept that. No problem.
Yeah. I think she was perfect for the role.
Yeah. Apparently, Emma Watson was up for Wanda as well.
She seems like she's just not acting as much as she used to. I think I can only think of like one credit in the last like 4 years.
She doesn't have to, man. She's making $20 million a movie.
I mean, she's still got that Hogwarts money coming in.
Other than Beauty and the Beast, she made a couple of dingers, though. She made...
what was that? Red Circle?
Just the Circle.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Oh, it's called Circle?
It's just the Circle. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Really?
It's really bad. And it's got a great cast. It has...
Who's the villain?
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, he's...
And then John Boyega's in it, too.
That's right.
It's so bad. It has a cool concept, but the how they carry it out is just, like, the most... Like, great idea, horrible execution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they were... I don't know who wrote that script. I can't remember. It was the same guy who directed it, but, like, man, it was just, like... So... Real quick, part of the movie takes place. It's the Circle is like this thing where you can live stream everything constantly, 24/7. You can live stream yourself, and then Emma Watson's character live streams herself for like months, just everything, a camera always on her, and then it has like comment threads of people commenting. And not a one vulgar thing was said in all the texts. Not one thing. I'm like, you know how much stuff people would be saying in those comments that are like not PG-13?
YouTube comments are pretty bad.
Yeah, it's like
cesspools.
Everything was like super nice. Like, oh, I love your hair. I was like, this is a little ridiculous.
All right. Anyways, that's not a Black Widow fact at all. So let me get a Black Widow fact in here for what the segment actually is about. Black Widow was actually originally scheduled to be released on May 1st, 2020, but obviously because of COVID, it was postponed until November 6th, 2020, then delayed again to May 7th, 2021, and then delayed again to July 9th, 2021.
Wow. Natasha Romanoff has actually dated a few Marvel superheroes in the comic books, including Clint Barton, Hercules, and Daredevil. Oh, and Bucky Barnes.
David Harbour plays the character Alexi in Black Widow, and on Stranger Things Season 3, he plays Jim Hopper, who kidnaps a Russian scientist named Alexi.
What are the odds?
Probably pretty good. I think that's the typical go-to
name.
It's not common. It's like the typical Russian movie, TV show Russian name.
Alexi.
Alexi and, yeah, Natasha. What else you got? Anything?
That's it for facts. There aren't that many out yet.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for tuning into this bonus episode of Black Widow. We hope you enjoyed the movie as much as we did. It's a lot of fun. If you love Marvel films, you will definitely like this movie. ScarJo is fantastic. Florence Pugh, Rachel Weisz, David Harbour. All terrific actors. They give great performances. I laughed like 20 times in this movie, hysterically a few times, and it's a good time. It's just like the Tomorrow War. You know, it's got some plot holes. It's a little slow at times, but it's just a good time. If you want to have fun, this is one of those movies.
It's a movie.
It's a movie. It's Don't a take movie. It too serious. Yeah, you have a good time. Have some popcorn, get some pizza, some Postmates. I'm just rambling at this point.
All right, we're going to cut
just,
off.
Let's just end this. Do you want to give another non-Black Widow fact?
No, I don't think we have time.
All right.
Take care, right, everyone.
Bye. Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.